Now, Mr. Wright, why don't you tell me a bit about train wrecks?
Train wrecks, we had three or four good train wrecks in Rossi. My early days, there was a train wreck where they had a cattle, many, oh, I don't know, maybe 30 cars, 25 or 30 cars of cattle went out that came from the west. And these cattle got loose in the Rossi. They were in everybody's backyard. There were dangers. They shot them. Everybody had roast beef for months to come. But anyway, there were steers. But they claimed that they went through the car, the rotten car, and that's what caused that wreck. Then there was different wrecks after that. Well, back, say, about 24 or 5, there's a good wreck there, and took down about 30 or 40 telephone poles. Not telephone poles, communication poles, I should say. The wires coming to St. John to Moncton, all that went dead. Anyway, there was this wreck here. Was a general wreck. Cars of wheat, cars of sneakers, which the boys got lots of, and all kinds of things. Acid. You could smell the acid. It was something like vinegar, you know, went out there. And the different wrecks, especially grain. I know myself. I got a few bags of grain. I mean, a few bags, a few hundred bags. It's for the taking. And I think it took them. That wreck there took them. Maybe a month to clean it up. You know how the railways are, they're very fast. And I watched that very close. But it took 2 days before the traffic could go through again. You know, the railway traffic.
Yeah.
Talking about the Rossi Station, those are the good old days, you know. There's all kinds of horses come down there from Rossi College, Rossi Netherwood, Rossi, name it. The mailman, Joe Kennedy, who run the Kennedy House at that time, the hotel, he had to deliver the mail daily. All the Thompsons and I'd go to say the Mighty Rich, but they all had coachmen, Robertsons, all those people. They come down there, and old Dave Goldie was the more or less like the taxi. He wore a hard hat when he carried people. When he called Coley, he wore a cap. Anyway, they there's lots of little stories a person could tell about that. Len Pierce used to bring the horse down from Rusty College. It was a white horse. And you know, you wouldn't believe it, but that same horse wouldn't stand there unless you went and got him a chew tobacco. He used to chew tobacco and used to dribble right down that white horse's chin, you know?
Oh, my
God. It was different, quite different. There's Bob. He was a coachman, or not a coachman, I guess a handyman for Rossi Netherwood. He had an old horse here. So everybody had an old, I shouldn't say old horses. Those horses were pretty good sometimes. And but what used to amuse me was about, let's say, that the train came in at 8:45 from Sussex. Picked up the people all along the line. And at 8:56, there'd be about 1/4 mile of horses all lined up going down to the station, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they had these poles there, you know, they tie the horses to. They're all chewed off by the horses. But it was a busy place. That Rossi Station, people don't realize how big it was at that time. Today, it's nothing. Because they had a baggage room for the baggage express. And then they had a freight shed. Oh, it's quite a big... Make 4 Rossi stations down at the end of the platform where it is there today. So it was quite a big place there, and a busy place. You could go down and sit in Rossi Station anytime and knock up a conversation with anybody, and they're from all over. And the boats used to come in there from across the river, Moss Glenway. Of course, those days, there was no buses, but there were lots of boats, and some were motorized, some of them weren't, some rode. And the same line going over from Rossi to Moss Glen, there was a road, and that was all treed. They put trees in the ice so you know where you're going. You wouldn't get lost. And one day, before they put the trees in, there's a fellow named Breen, Mort Breen. He used to bring the mail across, and he had at least like run horse. And us fellows were pretty good on our skates. Ran me good. And we all carried a rope around us, 3 or 4 ropes, tied around our waist. Be about an inch or two of ice, we wouldn't care. Anyway, we were up there off Henderson's Point, and this horse went through with the mail, Mort Breen. So Mort jumped out. He got out all right. The horse went through. We took our rope, tied them all together from around our waist, and put the lasso to the horse. lassoed the horse and pulled the horse out, and we saved the male. Anyway, that goes up. One day we did the same with a moose. A moose went through, and we pulled the moose out. We pulled the moose up in Rossy Wharf. And this moose was so cold, so frozen, we thought it was finished. Well, we just put the rope around his horns and half a dozen. We pulled him in and put him on the wharf. And went and got a bale of straw, put the bale of straw on top of him. Next morning, it was gone. It was so cold, that old moose was so cold, it did, that you could lift his tongue up and it flop right down the ice again. Wonderful what nature can do, how they preserve those sort of things.
Yeah. Tell me about sailing on the river, yacht names and owners. Who'd you know? Did you go sailing on the river? You must.
Not that much. You had a little doubt. Everybody had a little tongue, an old boat.
What was yours like?
Mine just an old cat boat.
An old cat boat.
But,
what did you name it?
Well, you're talking about sailing on the river. I mean, that has a little interest, because anybody could sail that, but the best one I know was, there's an old boat that came in there. It was a great big old boat, bigger than a sailboat, painted black, and I hung around there for a few months. And all of a sudden, this great big old boat took off out of nowhere. And here, who do you think was behind that but your famous inventor, Wilbur Turnbull? You know Turnbull's?
Oh.
Yeah, he took off that, and well, he used to come down there. You never know what he's doing next. Like, I knew him fairly well as a kid, and I'm in my 80s now, so that's over 80 years ago maybe. And he had an old coffee can, and he had numbers on the side, and he had a cork on the top, and he was floating inside the wharf, and he had a clock in it, and this coffee can used to turn around, and he had a pencil up against it. And the pencil going up and down, up and down, and up. Now, it didn't mean nothing to us young fellas, but it turned out to be that was the tides. And it was an invention he was creating at the time. And he sold this up and down the coast of the Atlantic coast, and down in the United States or Canada, and all over the world he sold those things. And of course, he sold all kinds of things. Propellers. Like,
yeah.
You heard of the pitch propeller for the airplane?
Propeller.
Yeah, well, he was better inventing or creating the propellers for boats. Like, during the war of 14 and 18, I think he turned the tide of the war by the fast propellers. He outdid the Germans, and he sold the patents to the United States. And he had a brain. I remember one time I was up at the store, Lou Merritt's store, Bill Thompson's store, for the corn. And the kid, I was still a kid.
Yeah, still a kid, right?
And he had a little sled, and he had some kind of little motor on. I didn't know. I didn't know anything. All of a sudden, this little sled took off, and he went up the road. He went home with it. You know, he's creating another thing, so like a little snowmobile, you know? And all those kind of things, you know? You got some very creative people or inventive people in Rossy. But Rupert Turnbull, he was decorated in Ottawa, you know, several times.
What else did he make? Tell me some of the adventurous things that he did.
Well, propellers was the big thing.
Yeah.
Warships. Especially on the warships. Well, I mean, like he created, different things like ice cream mixers and things like that. But you never knew what he did, or nobody else knew, just him. Because he had an old barn up there, and nobody was allowed into it. I was not. I will go know. Maybe I could go in, and my father. But you say, what else did he do? Yeah. I think Rupert Turnbull would have beat the Wrights. Because he had a frame up there, and I've seen it for many years. In the backyard, there's a propeller on it. He had his own airplane when the Wrights first flew. I mean, he had that creative mind. He had a brain that nobody else had.
Tell me about some more interesting people. You knew the Roberts.
Robertson? The D.D.
Yeah.
Robertson?
Yeah, tell me what they were like.
Well the D.D. Robertson, see, he was an Honorable John, he was called. He had, I don't know how many daughters. There was four very well-known ones. And they owned the land from Rossy Wharf right back past the Mackay Highway. Now that took up the Grove Road there.
Mm-hmm.
They owned down, let's say, where that church is, that church there, Anglican Church. They owned all that property.
They donated the commons, too.
And the commons there, we used to I used to pasture the cows, our cows down there. We used to have that rented from them. But where that school is, that school there, the Robinsons owned all that right back.
Did they donate the school?
Of no wealth, eh?
Did they donate the school?
No.
That was purchased by Ross.
But across from the school, that school there, you know what I mean, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, across the from the school, that's the old school.
Rossi Park.
Yeah, but across from that new school there, I'd call it new school, built in 1915, that me call it new. I went to the old school across where the Grudge is now.
Yes, and I went to my first grade one, that's it.
There was four kids in grade one in the old school where the Grudge is today, and every time it rained, we had a holiday. Every time it rained, we had a holiday.
Is that right?
Because the roof leaked. And that new school opened, that was in grade two, I had a big shot then. That's 1915. But in the old school, there was two rooms, one from grade one to grade four, and the other one from grade four to grade eight. And they had the old house in the back. We went to the bathroom. We had to go out and run a couple hundred yards in the back of the school.
Oh, my heavens, it had an outdoor plumbing.
Sure, that's positive. That was something. The snow would blow around you and everything.
Cold.
Oh, yes.
I see. Who else was interesting characters? You were talking about Gilberts, was it?
The Gilberts were, the Gilberts were like the Gilberts. Governor Pugley's wife was a Gilbert.
Uh-huh.
They owned that block in there around up in the hill there from Rossi Station.
Mm-hmm.
They're the old timers from Rossi. The original store in Rossi was owned by the Gilberts, by Rossi Station there. Valentine.
Who owned it after them?
They sold it to J.R. Robinson, and he put it up on the corner of the road up there. There was two stores up there. Maybe you can remember this, Sobeys.
Mm-hmm.
One side, and then Bill Thompson, he was quite a character, old Billy Thompson there. He sniffed and snorted and blew, and he had the store there for, I don't know, maybe 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Thompson was the one near St. David's Church. There were five or six people with the old hall. It was just an old hall. It wasn't insulated or nothing. There was maybe 50 different kinds of kitchen chairs in that hall, the old St. David's Church. My mother was there, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Royden Thompson, she was one of the the old coffees. The old coffee girl. They owned a great big apple orchard down there, so we steal all our apples from those days.
Oh, it was,
eh? Yeah, run from Rossi Station right up to the church, up to the school.
Oh.
And God, they had some great apples. Oh, and Bill Coffey. They're all old. He was an old bachelor, and there are two old maids. But they never lived there in winter. They went to New York.
Oh, I see. Rossi was a lot of cottages, summer cottages for the rich.
Rossi at one time, take Rossi Park, was all cottages. I think my grandfather was the first one to build he's a builder, by the way.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't for Joe Henderson.
Before Joe Henderson. Long before.
Oh, yeah.
And he built that, our house, and then he built one across the road from him, called Dobbins's, but all the rest of Rossi Park was Governor Pugsley owned it originally. Governor Pugsley owned all the lots, and he sold it to everybody individually, you know. And Turnbull's ran the first house, There's an old barn down there, and you go to Rossi Park, and you notice you almost hit the house there. Well, that was the old barn. I think I got hung in there one time. I remember that.
You were telling me about the Tennis Court Road.
Tennis Court Road, yeah, you call it the Tennis Court Road. Well, that's not the real name. It's Valentine's, really. They owned the beach down there. And that was called Sandy Beach Road, Sand Cut Road, that's a good name for it. And every day, kids, everybody, there may be 100 or 200 people on that beach. They never charged enough. You just went there. But it's the loveliest, cleanest beach you ever get. You go in the sand and come out of the sand, get in the water, come out, and you'll be just as clean when you come out of the sand as when you went in.
Mm-hmm.
I saved two or three lives down there. I remember one time Esmer and Meyer went down there, jumped off a raft, and rolled over his head and went under. I seen him going under. I knew he couldn't swim, and I seen him jump off the raft. And he jumped off the raft goes out, eh? Goes out, no. So he jumped off, and he went in. He's going down the third time, and I pulled him up. And he grabbed me around that bloody neck, and I could hardly get out of it. Anyway, I swam into my back, and I brought him in. And there's an old barrel on the beach, and we rolled the water out of him. You know, the other days, we used to roll the water out of him, put him in a barrel, and roll him back and forth. And we pumped water out of my forehead. Yeah, I'd say, totally. I found another body one time, too, down here in Kinghurst. I'm just trying to think of the name. They were looking for her, and I heard it, and I was in Ross. And somebody says to me, a fellow named Lem Pierce says to me, he said, Billy, somebody got drowned down there. Hopi Snow was her name, Snow, Colonel Snow's daughter. Got drowned down there, Kinghurst. So he had the fire station, and I jumped up in the fire station, rang the bell, boy, and there's no fire, but we just did the hell of it. We rang that old bell all the way down to Kinghurst, and when we got there, I had to do something. So get on there, must be 50 or 100 people on the shore. So I said, what happened? They said, Toby Snow went out there and haven't seen her since. I don't know where she is. She was 100%, 16 years old. Anyway, I said, come on. I said, Johnny Reynolds. Get in the boat. Bill Reynolds. He had a grad here. Get in the boat. So I rowed the boat out to the raft, and I said, no, let her drift. And sure enough, we're looking down, and in about 15 feet of water, I saw the body. I jumped out of the boat backwards, and I couldn't get down. The water's too deep. You only go so far, you know, and you can't get any further. You keep swimming. So I had to go back in the boat, and it took a while to find it again because there was a little bit of rough sea there. And I got a big rock, a big anchor. Next time I see that, across the body, brought it in, I went down, and all I could do is a great big, when you get down there, you know, when you get so far under, that feels like a feather. It's like nothing. But it got me to her body. I got her body. It took me a while. I damn near lost my own self. Too much pressure. Anyway, I don't know how many feet it was, but when I come up, the boat must have been, seemed to me like a half a mile away, but it wasn't near me. I needed help then, but then I still swam backwards. I brought her in. I got into my knees. You know, it wasn't a personalized shark come out to meet me. It wasn't personal. I got in right on the shore. It didn't seem right, did it?
Yeah,
then another body I pulled in another town was over at Rossi Wharf. This fellow's helping Harry Darkus. He's talking to Miller girl. Mm-hmm. That's her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Her uncle. Harry Darkus.
Harry Miller? No, that's her brother.
Harry Darkus. She was, her mother was Darkus.
Oh, Darkus.
Darkus, D-A-R-C-U-S.
Darkus.
Yeah. William Miller's grandmother was, uncle was a Darkus, yeah. Great uncle. Anyway, he was in charge of the wharf, and he said, Bill, a guy got drowned out here. I don't know where he got drowned, but he's drowned. And I know he is, because the boat's on the shore. So that night I went up and got the grappling irons, and by golly, I don't know how many people look up for the irons. I pulled the guy in again, pull him up on the shore, and of course he was dead, and hands up in the air like that, and the eel grass was wound around his neck, and all kinds of stuff, you know. That was the worst sight I've ever seen. He's staring right at me. Oh, boy. That's the end of that. That's the end of life with her.
Tell me about winter sports on the river, your ice boats and things like that.
It was all kinds of ice boats.
What did they look like? What did they do? How fast did they go? What would you wear? How did they go?
Well, I'd say if I had a good ice boat out there, you take your car and I'll beat you.
Yeah?
I don't do you. And we used to make our own. We made little ones for our own with old pairs of skates and stuff. But there was one down there that come up, hit the end of Long Island. It was going so fast one time. And then we got the jib off of that. The jib was the smallest part. And we made a great big ice boat, we thought. But this fellow, they were going so fast out there. They ran up against the island and two got killed out of three. That's the fastest move. They had terrific speed.
Yeah.
Speaking of people, there was one fellow here. Well, look at here. What you call it? A day. What was that? What was that day there? Groundhog Day.
Oh,
fellow was fishing out there in Renfort.
Mm-hmm.
The wind come up. Groundhog Day. I don't know if we heard that. Did you hear Groundhog Day?
Yes, I heard.
Well, anyway, the wind come up and carried it once over the minister's face across the river, Long Island, and killed him. He's dead. Oh, yeah. I know. It's over the bride, the groom, over the canoe, and the bride never come back. I don't know what happened, but she drowned.
They dynamited
that river there for a week trying to get her body.
A lot of people died in that river.
Yes. Some hunters there died a few years back, but two of them, I think it was in the boat, two or three were hunt. come back. Yeah, oh yes, you're right.
Yeah.
That water's very deep, you know, it goes nearly 100 feet deep.
Yeah.
I know, I do a lot of fishing up there. Great
Tell
fish.
About skating.
Skating.
Tell me about, you said you were a fast skater. You
meant to be... Oh, I...
Until you...
I entered in the skating, that's back in the 26, I think. I skated beside Billy Logan and Charlie Gorman and all those fellas. But I wasn't in there. They were much older than me. I wasn't 18. But the day of the meet, I turned 18 and I got let down. I couldn't compete with them. They were too big for it. But that was great. That was in Lily Lake, in St. John.
So did you skate out here too, though? You must have.
Oh, we skated. You know Long Island here. On a Sunday afternoon, that's 7.5 miles long. That's 15 miles around that island. We didn't think nothing of skating around that twice. That was the thing. There's hundreds of people. I mean, half of Rossi would be out there skating on the ice, old and young.
Yeah?
Old and young.
What about riverboats that were around?
Well, I remember the riverboats. There were boats come into Rossi Wharf, every type and every kind. And the riverboat used to come up here, I think it was about twice a week. It used to go up as far as Hampton and back.
Right? We've got a riverboat to Hampton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the old DJ Purdy, I took up St. John River on that.
What were the names of them?
I just forget now. I know the old DJ Purdy, the last one I went on, it's the last one to run.
Last one to Hampton?
No, that one, DJ Purdy went to Frederick.
Oh, it was.
St. John to Frederick up there. Up there.
Oh,
and
what about houses lost in fire?
Lost in what?
Houses. The houses that were burned?
Oh, I think it's good. Gilbert's over there had that great big story turned about in down there by Rossi Station. Three-story high. Well, that was some fire. The thrown piano to the third story.
They were?
Yeah.
Oh, my heavens.
It was some fire. Well, then Rossi didn't have a fire department. And everything was bucket and pail. And everybody came to the fire. In those days, it was known, bring a bucket or bring a pail. So the pail of water was carried along, then up a ladder. So you can imagine how much water would be in that pail when you got on top of the roof trying to put a fire out.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be too much. I know, I was up on the roof taking it. And to see any friend down below, he'd throw a pail of water at him. One of the dirtiest fires, the biggest fires, I think, was Senator Donville's house.
Mm-hmm.
And when that burned, boy, oh boy, I'll bet you there was, I was going to say, 100. I bet there were thousands of squirrels come out of the house. And they say at that time that the squirrels caused the fire. You know, they must have had eight or ten fireplaces in that great big old house, that massive house. And, these chimneys just twist around like that, even after the house is burned. You can see the chimneys were still up there, and you wonder how they're up there. They twist them around the beams, you know what I mean, where they built them. Mm-hmm. Anyway. All these squirrels come out of the house, and poor old Senator Dauble didn't last long. He got pneumonia and died after that.
Mm-hmm. I see. What about early days of motoring? What was your first car? What type of flats and what type of flat tires battle roads?
Tom Bell, one of the first cars in Rossi. Tea Taster, we used to call him, Tea Taster Bell. He was with Red Rose Tea.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of more of the wealthy type.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a couple up here. Governor Pugsley had a chauffeur. He had a John Dobbin with his chauffeur. There was who else? Oh, Frank Orr was a chauffeur for Mrs. John Thompson, the old lady who couldn't spend the interest in her money up there in Rossi. And first car I ever had, we ever had, was an old Model T Ford.
Oh.
By the way, I might tell you, with no fringe on top of that, just all plastic covers. Not plastic, it was canvas and isinglass. And Harry Gilbert bought a carload of cars in, all folded up, unfolded. $400 for a brand new Ford.
Really?
$400. That's what we paid.
Price?
Yeah, that's what we paid. $400 for a new Ford. And they give you a screwdriver and a pair of pliers and a bale of wire to repair it.
Did you have to, were those one of those ones you had to crank up?
Yeah, I had to crank up, yeah.
Oh, my heavens.
There was no Magneto.
What were the roads like in Rossi?
Well, they were old mud roads in those days. All the roads were mud.
after the election, people promised good roads. Then people were running for the election, promised to update
no,
the
Carter, road. No, Carter wasn't that time. There's a good man here by the name of Carter. He was a liberal, too. And he lived in Fairville, Carter's Road, Shipyard Road up there. By the way, Shipyard Road, that's where you build ships in Fairville, you know.
Really?
Yeah, there all kinds of ships. Well, I tell you how much. Roberts just had a hotel there. They had a store in the front.
Kennedy?
Store.
The Kennedy Fairville.
No, no, Fairville.
No, no, Roberts?
Fairville. Roberts, R-O-B-E-R-T-S, Walter Roberts. And store in the front. Then behind the store was the hotel. Behind the hotel was room for the men to work. They could put up 100 men there. And they had quite a shipyard there.
Oh.
Speaking of shipyards, you know, at one time, a lot of people don't realize it. We had quite a mill down here in Kinghurst, right here. And it was run by the Greens. Bill Green, I think. But he came back from the gold rush and up there in Yukon, and that's where he put his money. He built this great big mill, lumber mill. But after he built it, they couldn't get enough logs to run it. That's why they gave it up. He put a bridge across the top of the railway track to go across there.
What about the Kennedy House, and Arthur Kennedy.
Art Kennedy. Art Kennedy's one of the nicest fellows you could meet. Of course, his father, Joe, was the same. Joe Kennedy. Mrs. Kennedy came from the peninsula over there, and the farm's still there. It's for the grandsons and all the relations. Joe Steele runs it today, and they had a picnic there last week Trinity Church, from the old church over there, the people. There's 400 came up to the picnic, and they invited St. James Church out, and a bunch came up from there. And they had a great old time down there in that picnic. It's taken about Art Kennedy. Art Kennedy, I remember back when he used to rent horses, $2 a day, at the hotel. All hotels did that. Not all, but they had quite a patio of horses. There were about 8-10 horses. Because we lived right next door to them, we know. And they had a great big barn there, and they had 8 or 10 cows. That supplied the milk for the hotel. And they, Art Kennedy at that time bought that land from Mrs. D.D. Robertson. The D.D. Robertson, that's on the Grove Road, from the Hampton Road now out to the Mackay Highway. He bought all that property there on one side. D.D.'s in the back. Used to bring the hay down there. And then Art went from that. He kind of faded out of that business. He bought his milk and stopped his cows and stopped renting horses. And then he started getting the taxi business. He had an old car. He used to do a lot of taxi business all around. Everybody knew Art Kennedy. He's so darned obliging, you know.
Really?
If anybody had a funeral, he wouldn't charge quite a shipyard there. Oh. Speaking of shipyards, you know, at one time, a lot of people don't realize that we had quite a mill down here in Kinghurst, right here. And it was run by the Greens. Bill Green, I think, but he came back from the gold rush and left in up there in Yukon, and that's where he put his money. He built this great big mill, lumber mill. But after he built it, he couldn't get enough logs to run it. That's why they gave it up. He put a bridge across the top of the railway track to go across there.
Oh, no. What about the Kennedy House and Arthur Kennedy?
Art Kennedy. Art Kennedy's one of the nicest fellows you could meet. Of course, his father, Joe, was the same. Joe Kennedy. Mrs. Kennedy came from the peninsula over there. And the farm's still there. It's for the grandsons and all the relations. Joe Steele runs it today. And he had a picnic there last week from the Trinity Church from over there, the people. There's 400 came up to the picnic. And they invited St. James Church out, and a bunch came up from there. And they had a great old time down there in that picnic. It's taken about Art Kennedy. Art Kennedy, I remember back when he used to rent horses, $2 a day, at the hotel. All hotels did that. Not all, but they had quite a patio of horses. There were about 8-10 horses. Because we lived right next door to them, we know. And they had a great big barn there, and they had 8 or 10 cows. That supplied the milk for the hotel. And they, Art Kennedy at that time bought that land from Mrs. D.D. Robertson. The D.D. Robertson, that's on the Grove Road, from the Hampton Road now out to the Mackay Highway. He bought all that property there. mm-hmm. on one side, Dee Dee's and the left. He used to bring the hay down there. And then Art went from that, he kind of faded out of that business. He bought his milk and stopped his cows and stopped renting horses. And then he started getting the taxi business. He had an old car. He used to do a lot of taxi business all around. Everybody knew Art Kennedy. He's so darned obliging, he, you know.
Really?
Yeah, if anybody had a funeral, he wouldn't charge them for taxing them.
Yeah.
All kinds of things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Art Kennedy's well, well liked.
Tell me about Rossi's first fire engine. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember the day.
You one of the volunteer firemen?
Yeah.
You were?
I was a volunteer fireman, yeah. My father was a special one. And went around, my father and a bunch of them went around collecting $5 and $10 from here to there and to buy a fire engine. Now, they got so much money, they figured they didn't have enough. So the village of Rossi took over and they bought the fire engine. It was a chemical engine. It was, you know, it was chemical. Now, this chemical engine was a wonderful engine. I'll tell you how good it was. I'll tell you how good this engine was. One day in June, a bolt of lightning come out of the air. Sunny day. There's only one cloud in the sky. And the bolt of lightning come down and hit the steeple of the Anglican church and set it on fire. And it burnt from the top and no ladder could reach it, top of the church. So I was one of the guys who went up to see what they call the foolishly, they call the St. John Fire Department. They come out of the great big 4-inch hoses and great big hoses and pumpers and everything, and they collect the water to give. There's about a spoonful of water in the brook. They're going to pump it from there. There's no water to pump. So we had our chemical engineer, this fire engine I'm telling you about. So I was up in the steeple and I put the rope around me and I climbed up the steeple. I climbed up that steeple. They're starting to take the pews out. The communion rail and all that stuff up in the altar in front of the church. And I was up the steeple. I was halfway up the steeple. I could see my father down there. He looked at me about an inch high. He was saying, come on down, come on down. So I kept on going. And I went up with a hose. I chop a hole about every 10 feet and stick my foot in to hold me. Eh? I said to myself, well, what's the difference? Chop a hole with all the steeple there is going to save the church. So I kept on going. I put the fire out, by the way. I got a couple of bad burns in the back of my neck, but that was all right. And anyway, the fire went out. They repaired that. But anyway, it saved the church. Mm-hmm. Hardly got any thanks for it, but they bought a suit for me. I went in there, and it was an emergency time. And they bought me a suit. I think I paid $12 for it. A big hard one, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the fishing and shooting stories and the camps on the rivers.
What on the river?
Camping in the river. And shooting and fishing.
Well, you could get a deer those days. You just went back to Rossi College or go in the back of Carpenter's up there, where, up back at old Rossi Dam. I shot a couple of deer up there. They come right out. As a matter of fact, the moose used to swim across the river just up past Rossi. Every year they come across the river, the moose. But shooting, we never thought nothing of it. You take Taylor's Brook. There's a brook going from like Rossi College down to the Calabacasas there. Every time you go up there, you get dozen and a half trout. Anytime. Today, I don't imagine you get a minnow. So those days are gone. Hey, things change.
Pretty much fished out.
Yeah. Oh well, yeah.
Tell me about Jeff Kearson's blacksmith.
Oh, Jeff. Oh,
he must have a lot of fun.
Well, we just call him Wit. I don't know where he got the name Wit. But anyway, Jeff Kearson, he was a good old soul. I used to take my neighbor's horses down there, and I was only just thing enough to get on them. They used to set me up on the horse's back and say, get going. You whip the horse, and I'd go down there and stay there about 4 or 5 years old, I guess. He used to get all the wits, and he'd be quite amused. He always did have something for you. Remember one day, some characters used to come in. They always had, every blacksmith shop had the characters. And Dave Goldie, you heard of the name, he was going to commit suicide. But a poor soul. And it was characters, I said. It was Harry Green, very green and well caught her. Two of them fullers. And they said, "You want to commit suicide?" So I threw him on his back. Out for him. He got a knife. Shot him the knife. And had him on his back. And they said, "Dave, you want to commit suicide?" "Okay." And he pretended to cut his throat. He cut him in the face. See, so he could see the blood started bleeding in there. And that was okay. Pull him up. He never said he was going to commit suicide again. Never. So old Dave had his horse, and his horse was 38 years old. And this old horse lost his teeth, turned gray, from brown was white, lost his eyesight, all cataracts, and the horse was really old, you know. So he had to get rid of it, because it was dying, more or less. So he had Stan Carpenter come out and dig a hole and go and shoot it. So he sent him home. Couldn't take it. Couldn't let him shoot. He said, "Come back tomorrow." Stan come back tomorrow, and he said, "Stan," he said, "the horse is up near the place. You wouldn't have shot it anyway. Let her roll over in the hole. There you go." Next day they found Dave. Dave Goldie. He was hanging from the limb of an apple tree. Committed suicide. He did it. I said, "Commit suicide."
He must have been something.
He was alone. His wife is dead. He lost his wife before. So he's depressed. I could see that. But go on.
So Jeff Kearsted, back to him, he was quite a character.
Oh, yeah, well, he was a nice fellow, nice fellow. He had two sons. They went to Boston. I don't know, much more than that, but Jeff. But,
he put your,
He had a nice driving horse. I remember one time when the cars come out first, when the cars come out, some car hit him down here near Riverside somewhere and cut the horse all to pieces. But then slashed him. He had 200 or 300 stitches put in the horse to hold him together. The horse came around all right. Same old horse. He liked horses.
He must have.
But he shoeing horses every day. Everybody took the horses to the wet cases.
I see. What about activities at the Grove when General H.H. McLean was lieutenant of government?
Activities where?
The Grove. Did you ever go to the Grove when General H.H. McLean was lieutenant governor?
What you mean by the Grove? I know. Is that what they call the house?
Yeah, the big house. Did you go to any of those parties or see any of them?
Oh no, I wasn't in that. I wasn't a governor general. Well, you had to be assistant to the general to get in there.
Oh, you did.
And a bad dog there too. I remember that. Later on, I met Doug in the woods and we shot it.
Oh, you did.
Same dog. They don't do it.
Tell me about festivities of the Prince of Wales in 1917.
Yeah,
what went on there?
1917.
Or is it 1920? We've had some debate.
Around that date, yeah. You, speaking of that date, well, they parked the train. By the way, they had three great big arches. Must have been, I don't know how many feet high.
The Prince of Wales?
Yeah, and one for Fair Vale was up by the river. Well, you know where the Grove Road is in the Half Moon? That road going on there. One there in that corner, one in the other corner, and right from Rossi they had another one. And they were all made of roses. First time I've ever seen an arch like that. You know, I haven't seen it. It must have been 30, 40 feet in the air. Union Jacks and Rossi welcomes them, the Prince. And they had a great big stand down at, I remember that, a great big stand down there at Governor Pugsley's house. That's where the reception was. And that's where they had an orchestra and they're dancing. And I can remember so well, Senator Foster. Say, no, Senator Foster, Walter Foster lived beside where the Irving Station is now. That's where their home was. Lady Tilly lived beside it. Anyway, Senator Joanne, that was her name, Joanne Foster. She is a beautiful, I never seen red hair so long and so beautiful. She was dancing, and I was a kid, you know, a kid, you get your nose, just get your chin above the platform. She was dancing. I thought that was, that was a dream, seeing somebody dancing like that. As I said, I lived down beside the railway track there, the first out in Rossley Park, and I was walking along a track about 8 o'clock in the morning, nobody around. I don't know, early in the morning, and who was this fellow walking up the track? I didn't know who it was, a kid. And I said, walk along, and I said, who are you? He said, I'm the Prince of Wales. He took me by the hand, he took me back to the train, he gave me a handful of cookies. I laughed that time. I didn't laugh. I thought, home from Irish, couldn't believe me. You know? Mm-hmm. That was the Prince of Wales. I thought he was a great guy. He was a woman's man, they tell me. I don't know.
Really?
Different stories.
He knew how to charm the ladies, didn't he?
He charmed them all right.
That's great.
You like that part?
Yeah, well, it's interesting to know.
Well, he charmed the ladies. He was a good-looking fellow when he was young, you know. He wasn't bad-looking when he got older.
No.
Oh.
Seemed to be a nice fellow.
Mr. Sampson charmed him.
Yes, sir. Tell me about, Depression. How did Rossi take the Depression?
What year was that?
1930s.
So I wasn't here. I was in Montreal.
You were? Oh.
Well, in the 20s, there was depression here enough. You couldn't get a job here. I remember you couldn't get a job in Ross. Well, there's no jobs in Ross. Anyway, it's the worst place in the world to look for a job to be Ross. If you're starving, you couldn't get a job in Ross, or St. John in those days. But if you did get a job, you'd be lucky if you got $7 a week. I went to Montreal, and they offered me 10. I got 10. I got to 12. From 12, I got to 18. That's big money. You could buy 2 bottles of beer. I don't really drink beer. But you could get two quarts of Black Horse beer for 25 cents or 15 cents a quart. Look what it is today. A pint of beer cost you 2.5 in the beverage room. I wasn't a drinker, but, you know, that was there.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. Tell me about, did you go to RCS? Did you go to RCS at all?
There's two RCSs. There's that blue and white, Rossi Collegiate. Or there's RCS, that's red and white. I went to RCS.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it wasn't much of that. I never liked the teachers in the damn place.
You didn't?
No way did I ever. It had a stinker there by the name of Bill Russell. And I don't know. He taught from like grade 5 and 6, and then from 5 and 6, he went to 7 and 8, and I followed in that, and I hated his guts, and he hated mine. Uh-huh. He gave me a strap there 3 times a day if he could. And I met him years after, and I managed the theaters in Montreal, and he came into the theater. When I took him in, and I said, come on, I'll treat you. He thought I was going to buy it. He didn't know I was a manager. He didn't know I had that privilege to let people in. I said, come on here, sit down. He said, boy, what's the boss? I said, I'm the boss. I am the manager. He couldn't believe it. He thought I was the stupidest thing in the world, I guess. And I told him, so I said, why did you have to beat the hell out of the young boy? He hung his head and he said, I'm ashamed of myself today. He said, I went out there, he said, your secretary of the school's name is Blanchette. And he said, those kids out there are bad. He said, I want you to give them the works. I was the one he's giving the works to.
Were you bad, though?
Oh, yeah, I admit it now.
I imagine you were a rascal.
Yeah, but he didn't have no... Well, I wouldn't feel it anyway. I was feeding the cows and doing hard work, and my hands were calloused.
Tell me about sneaking up to the girls in Otherwood. I'm sure you were involved in that.
Only on Halloween.
Only on Halloween. What did you do on Halloween?
We did everything we could.
Such as?
We went up fire escape, we threw them dormitories and everything.
You did?
Oh, we had great fun there. Halloween, they wouldn't get
you. They were bad, right? Tell me about what type of lady what was your headmaster like?
Where? Rossi?
Yeah.
I told you that damn old Bill Russell, he's my teacher.
Is that who it was?
Oh, he was a teacher, worst there ever was.
Who else
thought about strapping him. But Charlie Wetmore was a good principal. He had a good principal there. He came from across the river in Moss Glen. He was good. He was all right.
Who else were your teachers, and what subjects did you take?
Take everything. You just don't take everything. You don't take not what you like.
I know, but what else? You took Latin?
Latin? Yeah, I hated Latin. I just put down not interested. My examination came up not interested, and I put it in big, bold letters.
And what else did you take? Math, English?
Yeah.
All those subjects?
Yeah.
What type of sports were you involved in?
I was a good sportsman all around.
You were?
A terrific runner. I could go in 100 yards, 200 yards, or 400 yards, or half mile. skating, I just ran my alley. Eh? That's where he developed muscle.
Athletes.
Yeah, I like that. But it wasn't as big then as it is today. You know what I mean? Sure, we two play hockey. We got to Sussex. I got thrown off the team in Sussex.
You did?
Yeah. A fellow named Kennedy up there, he's a bad player. He's playing center, I played center. And he brought a stick down, he broke my nose. All he had to do was break my nose. All he had to do was hit me in the nose. Well, I had a hockey stick too, didn't I? There wasn't a piece of that hockey stick left, it was a foot long. I put him in the hospital.
Oh,
God. That's his better than me. For that one, yeah.
Oh, Steve. Hockey seems to be quite a violent game.
Well, most days he didn't win one way, he'd win another.
Yeah.
I went to Montreal and Danbury had a good team. I had a good team in Montreal. Mm-hmm. Hockey. Yeah, I played hockey in Montreal.
Tell me about the medical services of Dr. Peters.
Dr. Peters? Yeah. Well, Dr. Peters, when I left here, he wasn't practicing too many years. You see, I left here in 1927. Okay. Brought my sister in the world. Didn't bring me in, or my older brother, but he brought three of the family in. My family, but he's a wonderful doctor.
Was he?
For bringing in children.
Yeah.
I guess half of 99% of Rossi's Dr. Peters brought them in. That's why it's so well linked.
Yeah.
I don't know if they ever paid him for it. Don't do the good there.
Yeah. Isn't that neat? Tell me about Walter Allison. You don't know
Walter Allison?
You know, do you
Manchester
know?
Robertson Allison?
I believe so, yeah. But then, but Walter Allison.
That machine's on. I'd like to know about him. I didn't know Walter as well as he was a boy. John Ellison. He's not getting the other one. Down there now. There's a daughter. They're a great on the... I wouldn't know too much about Walter Ellis.
Okay. Tell me about Indians at the Sandy Beach.
Oh, the Indians.
Laugh and Liberty, all that.
Oh, yeah. Donald Dominick, he's a hunchback. He's a dirty old devil when he got drunk. He used to get drunk every Saturday night. His wife, he had two kids, and his wife. And they can make beautiful, beautiful baskets. They couldn't be finer baskets she made. And he used to make axe handles and baskets and what else they make? Well, think like a bow and arrows. And you go in and Saturday morning, try to get in the train. And the Gagger guy had some money, and he can sell them in the market. And he'd get drunk. Then there's Laughing Louie.
They'd
go ahead. When they drink, they went wild. Went crazy. Kitty. Anyway, there's Laughing Louie. I can still see him. Can't laugh. You'd hear him half a mile away. And they all live in these old tar paper shacks. They just pick any old boards and they cover the tar paper and they live that summer and winter. Would you believe me when I told you they had no floors in the shack, no coal shack? I know down there it's different times. I know where two Indians are buried on, what do you call it, Sandy Beach, what do you call it, Tennis Court Road. I know where there's two Indians buried in the woods there. The other day I met a fellow and I told him, I said, he said, my son, Morris Blanchett, my son bought a lot up there. I said, I ain't going to tell you something. Be careful what you're digging up, because you're going to get some skeletons up there. I saw there's two Indians buried right there, one there and one over there. And he didn't believe me. I don't care. But he said, no, I saw them buried them. Because my father made the coffins for them, made a box, pine box, buried. They're buried. Indian. Anyway. Now there's, what the heck was it? Nellie, there's old Nellie down there. She lived down the other beach, so. But I seen as many as 20.
Are there gypsies there too?
20, 25, no. No, just Indian. But they move. They don't stay too long, you know. The Indians will move. And, I suppose, 15 or 20 there times. 5, 10 or 8 shacks. Stink. Oh, yeah, it's not stinking. Like, Indians are lazy, you know. And they used to go out hunting and skinning. But I like the sweet hay basket they used to make. Get the sweet hay up by Emerson's there. I mean, there's nice sweet hay baskets and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about the golf club.
I don't know too much about the golf club. I know one thing, the golf club wasn't nothing compared to what it is today. Because Thompson, Roy Thompson, Willie Thompson, he was a millionaire.
Yeah.
And he used to, well, he had bulldozers and all kinds of things. They worked there for years. He worked just for a hobby. He made that golf course what it is today, you know. Nine holes and went to 18, and I think he's got 24 holes there now. I'm not sure. I don't know too much about it, but I do know that he went down to Bermuda. Not so much for Skip's taxes. What's that hotel? He owned that too. He got a Jane Robinson place. Corner there, the tennis court road there, across the, what do you call that place there? It's a rooming house, like.
Chateau Lawn,
yeah. That's where Thompson lived, that's where that kind of money is. He owed the village $35,000 or something. He skipped the Bermuda or something, he didn't have to pay.
Oh, man. Tell me about the elections and all the things that went. What would an election be like back then?
Well, I wouldn't be serious about that.
Well, Ross was mostly conservative.
Who said that?
Well,
conservative told you that.
Probably.
My father was a liberal and a staunch on that. And Carter and Fairlie was a member of Parliament.
And, there you go.
And he they took it all serious. I mean, the day of elections, the holiday, eh? It's a holiday. Everybody took a holiday. Oh, yeah, really. They congregated around the school there, and the liberals were on one side and the conservatives were on the other.
Were they fighting?
Well, more or less, yeah.
Yeah.
You vote for me and that, you know.
No. What else would go on for election? Were there any election promises? What were their platforms?
I left Raleigh's Rossi at quite an early age. I wouldn't be interested in them promises.
What else is important about Rossi? Tell me about Rossi, what you remember.
Well,
growing up, being a boy.
It's all grown up now. It's not the same at all. I remember Rossi way back when, you know, there was senators and members of parliament and lawyers and judges, two dead judges there, and people of real authority, not like today. You got more authority, right? Governor General McLean or Governor Pugsley or people like that. You haven't got that.
They're well off.
Oh, really well off. Yeah.
And what did your family do? What were the businesses they
had? My father's a carpenter, contractor. My grandfather built houses here long before Joe Henderson ever thought of coming here. There's Joe Henderson and Jim Henderson, two brothers up there. Anyway, you know where the what do you call that? The church place there.
St. Paul?
St. Paul's Church. You know, where the minister lives. What do you call that?
The manse?
The manse. Yeah. My grandfather built that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He built a lot of houses around here. A lot of houses. The Thompson's houses, the Purdy houses. He built. My grandfather built part of Rossi College. My father built the church there in Brookville. Things like that. I don't know all the houses. Don't know that one across there. Mm-hmm. Most of the houses.
What did people do back then? You said that most of them
weren't. Most of them were. They had to be. Well, there wasn't that much to do in Rossi. I mean, it wasn't. There's no manufacturers in Rossi. It never was. Only place that hired men would be up in Robertson's Boat, where built boat houses. A boat, I mean, up at the Robertson's Wharf. Or they'd be hauling something, or dragging something, or building something. My father one time had 15 carpenters working for him. Give you an idea. And but time marches on and those things fade out.
Do you have anything else to add about Rossi? Any stories to tell?
I got stories to tell, but I wouldn't dare put them on tape.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Any stories you can tell that weren't bad? That weren't bad things to tell, but interesting things? Stories about people that weren't necessarily bad, but interesting?
No, I don't know any of the stories. I know it's a good bunch of drunks rolling, Rossi.
Yeah. You did, eh?
More so than today.
Do you think?
Pardon?
Do you think?
Yeah, I don't.
No. Tell me about people. What were the people like in Rossay? Such as, were there common folk in Rossay, or were they all well off?
No, I'd say 50.
And what were the common folk like?
Well, most of them would be working in St. John or something like that, eh?
They took trains.
Yeah, they took the train to St. John.
Were the trains?
There was no buses. Well, that's where everybody met, you know? That's where everybody met. They got the gossip of the day on in the smoking car or in the train itself. There was standing room, too, you know? Surprising how many cars were on that train going to...
How many would be there?
Car? I don't know. Maybe 70 or 80 cars. Maybe 10 cars. You know, that was the milk train, Sussex train coming in. They call that the milk train coming in through Rush. See, if many trains come by. It's the milk train. There was one to take them to work, and there was the what they call the Ocean Limited. That went up as far as Moncton. The Ocean Limited, then the Trans-Canada train. Then another one went to Halifax. But many trains went by. You didn't need a watch because you knew exactly what time it was by the time that train went by. 2 o'clock in the afternoon will be the Ocean Limited, you know, set.